so we didn't sleep much last night, but we're going home, so we're really happy about that. Hello and welcome to edition 234 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula One and we're going to be on the grid next year. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We are sat here at the iconic Rushcutters Public House with its soundtrack on the outskirts of Norwich, or as my recording device currently says, the Broads National Park. It's a bit of a stretch, but the Broads is wonderful, as name checked by, of course, David Bowie. Anyway, I digress. We are also going out on Future Radio, and we are here to review the Mexican Grand Prix and another brilliant day in the life and times of Lewis Hamilton. And that will be a challenge, given we fail consistently to be objective and neutral about Lewis Hamilton. Coming up, five-star Lewis, or is it? Max Power, and that's a bit rich, your helmet. Bit convoluted, that one. Hi, I'm sports journalist Michael Bailey. A very good evening to you, or morning, depends when you're listening. And joining myself and us on tonight's podcast, we have reigning three-times NRF1 Prediction League champion, but he's kind of given the f*** up this year, Steve Rust.
Hello.
And Formula One blogger and the man Hamilton fans love to hate, Callum Springall.
Good evening.
It's got a nice balance here, because Steve is officially a number one Lewis Hamilton fan. Callum, you're not quite at that level. Gentlemen, how are we? Steve, we haven't had you on for a while. You've been a busy boy.
Yeah.
All good, though?
Yeah, all good, though. Just busy, but it's always nice to come back and do a pod.
Well, it's nice to have you, Steve. Yeah, it's been a bit of a while now. When did you start doing this pod?
Originally?
Yeah.
I think the first season...
Was it the end of season review of the first year, I think, wasn't it? Because you rocked up for the last pod, 2012.
Yeah, I think I did about sort of two or three pods of that season, but I'm trying to think which season that was. I think I've done, I think this is now four seasons now.
Four and a quarter,
so that would have been the one previous to the 4 years ago, so 2013.
Loads. Yeah, we'll call it loads. Yeah. I mean, it's lovely that podcasting has become so, so popular. It's brilliant to see so many podcasts out there now. Seventh season. Callum, how are you?
Reasonably good.
Yeah. Busy?
Reasonably.
Have you seen your brother much down at Williams Way? Have you been pestering him much?
Well, there was the Williams Staff Open Day a few weeks ago.
Yes.
But I think I've been on since then and talked about it. I think so.
Was I on that?
I think so.
I can't remember. Sorry, that's rude. I remember the cars looked awesome, though.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Brilliant. Well, let's crack on then, shall we? And rather than start talking about the race, we'll get on to the Mexico Grand Prix in a bit. We have to talk about Lewis Hamilton, of course, don't we? Five times world champion. I don't think that had quite sunk in for him as he sort of paraded around Mexico City on Sunday evening. Steve, what does it mean? What does this achievement mean?
To whom?
Anyone. Anyone. Lewis. To you.
to me, it's beyond what I'd ever imagined was probably likely to happen. You know, I mean, after sort of his first 10 years ago, there were a lot of seasons there when I thought, do you know what, I think he's just destined to be no more than Nigel Mansell and all of the others that just got the one championship and probably deserved a lot more. But I mean, the last four seasons now, I think, is it? Yeah, since 2014, yeah. Have just been, for a Hamilton fan like myself and everyone else out there, it's just been a dream, really.
I mean, you think about how many issues he used to have, you know, there'd be obviously things going on in his private life, and he did have to sort of grow up at a later age, probably because he'd done so much... such a lack of growing up when he was sort of being pushed through the formula and trying to concentrate on being a racing driver. And we almost saw him grow up a few years ago, and there were, you know, I think a few times when I called him a bit of a drama queen, and he needed drama in his life to sort of keep him ticking along. And that's been very different in the last few years. It's a much more settled, calm, I find him really eloquent. I know that, you know, perception and probably to a degree reality from some people I've spoken to is he's disappeared slightly up his in recent years, but yet he still comes across as if he kind of knows where he's come from and what he's about, and he's so respectful of the people who support him and push him along. So I'm not going to ask you that, Callum, but in terms of
quite blunt in my assessment of that,
let's just leave that for a second. But in terms of I mean, his fifth championship win, four of them were Mercedes, first of course with McLaren back in the day. Is this his best, given what he's had to come up against? Or,
in a way, personally, I'd probably still look at 2008, considering that that was a year that Ferrari were at least as good as them, and Massa was, by and large, at least as good as him. And essentially, it came down to Ferrari ballsing up a pit stop in Singapore and the engine letting go while he was in the lead in Hungary with about three laps left. Almost for certain this year comes quite close to that, given that he's not made the glaring mistakes that Vettel has at times, and that Mercedes have been there or thereabouts pretty much every race since Monza-ish, maybe Spa. Before then, he was still in the mix and right up with Vettel when Ferrari were clearly faster, purely because Vettel was the one that was making the mistakes in France and in Austria with a grid penalty that cost him, and in Germany as well, putting himself out of, at the very least, second place and probably a win. But still, I can't help but feel that it's a championship that comes down to Vettel's mistakes rather than Hamilton not making them.
We'll definitely talk about Sebastian Vettel in a bit. Officially then, Lewis Hamilton, he's only behind Michael Schumacher, who has seven world titles. That's quite a lot, although I think there's a bit of me that Lewis will think, well, that's only two now. Fangio, of course, has five, so Lewis is tied with Fangio, which, again, if you stick a highly competitive sports person and put them level with someone, I imagine the first thing that goes through their head is, well, I can beat them. Is that accurate? Is that fair with what Lewis is and what he's achieved and his talent?
Yeah, I think so, really. I mean, I think there's no reason why you can't compare him to the best. People have different opinions on that, but you can't. I don't think even all of his haters from over the years, which I think are probably very minimal now, cannot sort of deny the laps that he puts in at the right time, the performances he puts in, you know, all of those classic ones that we just see so often. And then, like Callum said, they're just a faultless season, you know, and that, as blunt as it is, wins championships. Well, obviously, if in the right car, of course, but which, you know, helps. But yeah, I think it's more than fair to compare him to the likes of Fangio, who he's now tied with, and even Schumacher. And I think it's actually quite nice that he's now tied with someone that got most of his championships at Mercedes from when they were last a full works team.
I think it's a bit pointless to compare drivers from different generations. I think it's something that I've always said, to be honest, because, you know, Jackie Stewart raced in completely different circumstances and completely different cars against completely different people in a completely different competitive environment than Lewis Hamilton or Michael Schumacher or Fangio or, you know, Nigel Mansell, for example, has, or Ayrton Senna. So it's fair enough to compare drivers from the same generations, and there are always going to be mitigating factors in that and saying, well, so-and-so had the better car and whatever. But to compare apples with oranges is a bit illogical in some sense, even though for some people it may be quite incredibly romantic.
Yeah, for some people. I was on BBC Radio Norfolk this morning talking about Lewis Hamilton, which is exciting. Thanks for the offer and the chance, BBC Radio Norfolk. Hopefully we'll do it more now that George Russell's going to be on the grid, Norfolk's finest. But they asked, you know, should Lewis Hamilton now be knighted? And it got into a bit of an honours discussion, which I wasn't quite prepared for, and a wider-ranging discussion. But, you know, you think about it, Sir Stirling Moss, but he never won a world championship. But, of course, completely different era in terms of what he was having to go through. Lewis Hamilton, five times world champion. Sir Lewis Hamilton, Steve? Even Damon Hill's not a sir, which is a f***ing disgrace, by the way. Or his dad.
I ain't even thought about those kind of honours. I mean, has he ever been given, like, an OBE or CBE?
OBE, or I think he's an MBE. Damon Hill's an OBE, right, I think, off the top of my head.
Okay, well, I like these awards and things that they give out. Yeah, that's fair enough, but when you get knighthooded and it gives you that sort of title, I've never really been too sure sort of about the kind of point behind that. So for me, I don't really buy into that.
Callum, do you care?
No, frankly. No. I mean, I've never really gotten why, you know, sports people get knighthoods and whatever just for being successful. And if he gives half of his winning salary or whatever to charity and demote, you know, gives it to a good cause, then there's a case. But for as long as he is simply an A-lister, I don't really think you can make much of an argument for it, other than the sentimental one.
Simply an A-lister. So it's a nice little symmetry that actually at the Mexican Grand Prix, where of course Lewis Hamilton won his fifth world title, it was also the 50th anniversary of Graham Hill winning the Mexican Grand Prix back in 1968 in a Lotus Ford. So there you go, a little bit of a tie in there to Norfolk, and of course one of Lotus's greatest drivers and a British driver winning the Mexican Grand Prix 50 years before Lewis Hamilton wins his fifth world title. How about that? We'll obviously continue the discussion over at Patreon, in our Patreon podcast, in terms of Lewis Hamilton's world championship success. In the meantime, have a reminder of the best places to interact with us on social media: Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, the handle at the NRF1. You can see us there. Send us emails, we love reading them, nrf1podcast@gmail.com, and of course there's a website, nrf1.uk. Right, okay, let's switch our attention to the wider action at the Mexican Grand Prix and fire up the NRF1 pit stops. I guess we should start with Red Bull, because of course they won the race, and as did Max Verstappen, his fifth win in terms of his career. There was a nice bit where Martin Brundle, Norfolk's own, claimed that the fact that Max said he was happy to have his engine turned down after Danny Ric's retirement was a sign of Max showing that he didn't mind finishing second, and that was really mature, whereas I would say that that's exactly not what he wanted. He just wanted to not fit, make sure he didn't DNF. But in terms of Max and his performance, I think Autosport suggested that Max's win stole Lewis Hamilton's thunder, which I thought was particularly overblown. And for an Autosport where, let's be honest, they were saying that Guy Edwards was dead when he wasn't just a few weeks ago, maybe Autosport should keep a little bit of a tighter rein on what they're actually saying. But that said, it was a very good drive for Max.
Yeah, and it was quite, as we saw last year, quite Vettel-esque, in that he just grabbed first position from the off and then trotted off into the sunset with Mariachi in tow.
Yes, quite. And he did work quite well to bounce back, I suppose, from having missed out on becoming the youngest ever pole sitter, Steve, because that was Sebastian Vettel's record. It looked primed for Max to take it. I think everyone was expecting it. And then his teammate goes and, well, nicks it off him by a few tenths or whatever it was. And we doubt, I guess, whether Max will get a chance to recreate that if he's only got until the end of this year to do it, because this was a real opportunity for Red Bull that they probably won't get in Brazil or Abu Dhabi. So I guess it was good to see Max bounce back in the right way on Sunday, given he basically said he had no sleep. So he was obviously in a strop until he got back in the car and was able to do something about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've heard it said before, you know, it's best to do your talking on the track. So, you know, I mean, if he was as annoyed as he said he was, then he certainly done that on, you know, yesterday on the track. I mean, he had a faultless race and thoroughly deserved to win it. And you know, you could sort of say that's a champion's sort of winning drive, as we have said previously on a few occasions.
And we all know what he's capable of. And I guess when we talk about people like Lando Norris and George Russell, our own George Russell coming through, Max is probably going to be the bar that they're going to be aiming for by the time they're hitting some serious drives, or hopefully that is what happens. Worth pointing out that Max hilariously drove into his second place marker after qualifying in a fit of rage. Hang around in his car, obviously. We know that he didn't sleep and probably smashed up his hotel room. That's obviously a joke, but he might have. But he did still find it within himself to give Danny Ric a pat on the shoulder for the fact that he did such a great job in qualifying to out-qualify Max, which hasn't happened a lot this year at all. So fair play to Danny Ric. You'd have thought he'd maybe have been rewarded with a little bit of luck in the race, but he doesn't really get luck, does he, Danny Ric?
Not really. I think I saw something a couple of weeks ago that said since a certain benchmark, I can't remember what it was, I think it was the start of 2017, the vast majority of his races have been affected by some form of mechanical issue in qualifying or in the race, which has either hampered him or meant that he couldn't even finish. And I think this season he's had something like 8 DNFs,
yeah,
which is something you'd expect in, you know, the early mid-90s, not 2018.
I mean, the only thing I would say is that luck doesn't generally happen so consistently. So do we get to a point where we're like, is there something Daniel's doing that's pushing these cars too far, or he's not doing it well?
Last season it was Max that was having all the bad luck. True. I don't think anybody really genuinely said, is he pushing it too hard? I mean, that all came when he was stuffing in the barriers, which is kind of fair enough.
When he clearly was pushing it too hard. Well, there we go. I mean, it did look like Danny Ric had an engine blow up, which would, of course, been ironic given his Renault power and the fact of where he's going next year. Of course, we've since been suggested it was either a clutch or a hydraulic issue, so maybe Renault get let off for that one, or maybe Christian Horner's just being kind, although I'm not really sure why he would do that. He did offer Renault some credit for Max's drive, but he's in a curious situation, isn't he, Danny Ric? Because, you know, we've spoken a lot about it in recent podcasts, but, you know, since he's decided to leave Red Bull, I imagine it's been a pretty awkward atmosphere for him. He has had difficulties with his Renault power. He's obviously off to the works team. And what was the thing that Helmut Marko said to Danny Ricciardo after he finished on pole? Oh, well done, Danny. Brilliant stuff. Make the most of it, because it probably won't happen again for a while. Cheers, Helmut.
Sour grapes. I think that the relationship there had gone sour anyway. I think there was a few times when he was sort of touting like number two driver and all this, that and the other, which was kind of Weber-esque from Vettel, you know, Weber days. But I don't think there's a lot of love there between the team and him. I mean, they offered him a contract. They obviously wanted him to sort of stay. But I think he's doing the right thing. I mean, he's not in a position where he could take a Ferrari or Mercedes seat. But I think to go to a works unit or a manufacturer is still the best thing at the moment, even if it is Renault. I mean, that's work in progress. I'm sure they will be up there competing with Mercedes and Ferrari in the future.
You think it's not as big a risk as some people suggest, don't you?
Not on the reliability front. Because if you look at the failures between all of the Renault teams this season, the vast majority have been on the Red Bull, and the vast majority of those have been on Ricciardo's side, so there's perhaps some bad luck element to it. But even over the last 2 years, the most amount of Renault failures have been on the Red Bull. So the only worry really is whether or not Renault are going to be spending enough money on the engine. Because I believe they're currently being outspent even by Honda, whether they're going to spend enough money on the engine to really get it up to the level of competitiveness that is going to be required to beat Ferrari and Mercedes.
Supposedly doing a complete new engine for next year is what they've said. A completely new.
So that can mean one of a few things.
Let's just hope it works, whatever it is they come up with, and they test it properly, which of course they will try to do, obviously. Push the boundaries, but just not so that it doesn't work. If you can do that, that's the perfect pitch, of course. So let's continue on in our next pit stop to a Renault-powered team that is, of course, making entirely the most of its engine. McLaren. I mean, this has been it feels like each year we talk about McLaren in a more derogatory way. For a brief moment in one pre-practice session, I think Fernando Alonso went out. I think he was probably the only car on the track. I think it was when he went out on slicks and no one else had bothered. Did the fastest time. His engineer pops on the radio. Fernando, we don't get to say this very often, so you are P1. I didn't hear Fernando's response, but I imagine he chuckled to himself in his helmet and probably said, yeah, you know what?
Did you hear what he said to them in qualifying? Because he went out in Q2, I think. And I think he had some traffic on his last qualifying lap. and on the way back in he said, "You have one job."
Well, that's not strictly true, I would imagine, but still, that's a bit harsh, unless they've got someone who specifically works out when someone should come back out from a pit stop. I don't think that's going to be one person's job. But there we go. I mean, Fernando is luckless as well. He managed to drive into some debris. There's not a lot you can do about that, and that means that he now can't beat the record for most completed Formula One laps, which is probably a fitting way for Fernando to sign off from F1.
I don't think he really cares.
No, I imagine that. I mean, that is a record, really, isn't it?
That's like having the most amount of race starts. It's literally just an indication that you're there making up numbers.
Yeah, it's just, I've lingered around long enough. Well done.
Kimi Räikkönen stat.
But fair play, Stoffel van Dorn. He broke his duck, his barren spell of pointless finishes. He finished in the points, amazing. Showed us what he can do, you know, because some of us have forgotten. I think he's looked a bit like a broken driver in recent weeks and months. I know that Kyle is a big Stoffel fan. We know he's going to be driving in Formula E next year. I do now. So that's exciting. Go on, Stoffel. I think it's a great opportunity for him to prove what he's got. And I have my Formula E connections. So do you, don't you, Callum?
To some degree.
Yeah. We, of course, will hope he gets to show what he can do in the electric, in the milk float series.
There's probably about as much of a connection between myself and Formula E as there is between Marcus Ericsson and Norfolk.
Oi, stop that. Stop that. That said, the Formula E FE cars, I think they look brilliant. So good job. Keep it up. And, I'm sure we'll watch some of it next year. We better touch on Ferrari then, haven't we? Finally, Sebastian Vettel missing out on... clearly a guy who, when he picked up his four world titles at Red Bull, didn't think A, it would take so long to get a fifth, and he still hasn't, and B, that someone else would get there first, that of course being Lewis Hamilton. It struck me that he seemed pretty cut up, I thought, at the weekend.
Yeah, indeed. He's got himself to blame, in my opinion. He's made his fair share of bad mistakes. Has cost him quite dearly this year in points. I've sort of said previously to other people, I don't think he's as complete a driver as Hamilton. I don't think he takes his racing as serious. I don't think he's always as willing to accept his mistakes and actually try to not make them again. I think he's not necessarily quite the right team that can provide him with the right sort of tools and the right people behind him to actually improve the car. I think they're just as bad as him, in my opinion. But he's not going to get a seat at Mercedes. Certainly not anytime soon, as far as we're all aware. So that's what he's got to work with. But I suppose in his eyes, he gave it his best shot. But we've all got our opinions out there, and I wouldn't agree with that. But, there we go. I mean, maybe that will kick him, in the backside to actually sort of trying to work a bit harder and iron out those mistakes and etc. etc.
I think I can't remember if it's on the podcast or just a conversation, but someone said to me that the thing about Seb is when the plan works, he's bang on it. It's when the plan doesn't work that you see him fray a little bit. And I don't think there's any doubt that Sebastian Vettel didn't mean to make any mistakes this year. It was nothing deliberate in it. It was just his reaction to situations and pressure. And I guess the reaction I think we saw from him in the press conference, I mean, it was a brilliant interview with him coming straight out of the car. I'm so glad they do those immediate interviews with him because of that raw emotion. He didn't want to talk about his mistakes immediately after with David Coulthard because he didn't want to address that. He just wanted to say thanks to and well done to Lewis, and he went and spoke to Lewis, and that was quite touching, I thought, and quite genuine. And then afterwards you see from the pictures how cut up he is about it, and probably that's fueled a lot by the fact that he knows it was his own errors, his own mistakes that ultimately cost him. I hope someone works out what the championship would perhaps have looked like now had he have say won the race in Germany and work out maybe the likelihood of how close things would have been at this point if he hadn't made his mistakes. And that's not an easy thing to work out, but I hope someone's working it out who's got more time than me. But it just strikes me that going into next season off the back of those mistakes, the fact that Ferrari didn't really make the most of the car they had possibly this year, you could argue certainly Sebastian, he's under pressure. He's going to have to deliver something next year. Charles Leclerc coming in next to him as well. That's a bit of pressure for Seb to kind of rise up to him. He's going to have to prove himself again a bit.
And I suppose there's every chance of Hamilton Alonso style upset in the midst, assuming that Vettel isn't going to learn from, you know, some small, some quite inescapably huge errors that he's made this season. There's every chance that he could be world champion next year if he has the car. There's every chance that this year, in some sense, is in the same vein that this year is a repeat of last year. Next year could be, in some ways, a repeat of this if he's not careful. But I don't agree with Hamilton being any harder a worker than Vettel is, or being any more dedicated to racing. And from what I hear, if anything, that's on the contrary. You know, Vettel's the guy that, especially at the start of the Pirelli era, he was the one that was talking to Pirelli about the tyres and what they were good at, what they were not good at, and trying to adapt himself to the tyres, as, you know, many great world champions do in their heyday. And he's also the guy that spends countless hours until late at night, well after the moon has arisen, spending time with the engineers. So I don't really know how you can expect someone to be more dedicated to the racing side of things than that.
Fair play to Kimi Raikkonen, because he didn't run Lewis Hamilton off the track when he had the chance. In fact, he gave Lewis a fair amount of room, and it was a very brave move from Lewis as well. But then I guess Kimi's probably, ironically, one of the last people to help his teammate out to win a world title, bizarrely. I can't remember the last time the Constructors' Championship was decided after the Drivers' Championship. I don't think it's happened, certainly since we've been going, which was, of course, 2012. So then it probably hadn't happened before Red Bull started their little era of dominance at the end of the sort of start of the last decade or whatever.
It was probably 2008.
Yeah. I was thinking 2007-8, because
that was when Raikkonen and Massa were both competitive in Copeland.
Well, hey, Key.
One of those years, McLaren couldn't win the constructors as punishment for the
Spygate.
Yeah.
Yes,
shout.
I think that was 2007. They weren't allowed to be in the constructors.
So what does this say? To me, it says, okay, you know what, we've had a pretty good championship for this year, because Ferrari and Mercedes were a little bit closer. I don't think you agree with me, do you, Callum?
I think Valtteri Bottas is just so vanilla. I mean, there is some aspect that he's been quite unlucky, which in the first five or six races or so I would have wholeheartedly agreed with that, but ever since he's just grown into almost like the Rubens Barrichello role, and hasn't really ever been on the same pace, and it's almost a pattern developing now that he's only really competitive on certain circuits, like Russia, for example, was one of the only times that he looked competitive last year, and one of the only times he's looked competitive this year. Even in the moments when Hamilton is supposedly at his zenith. So I can't help but feel that there's some aspect that how good Hamilton is slightly overblown by how mediocre Bottas is.
Great wingman, just don't tell him that. But there we go, at least he tweeted his congratulations to Lewis for his world championship, so that's always good of him. Alright, well, there'll be plenty more pit stops and chat about the 2018 Mexican Grand Prix to come, alongside all the major talking points away from the track. Just check out patreon.com/nrf1 right after this podcast. So as always, it's time for Of the Weekend. Let's rattle through these, shall we, gentlemen? Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the weekend.
Verstappen.
Yeah.
Verstappen.
Yeah.
Steve's in a hurry. Team of the weekend.
Red Bull.
But who else? Because you couldn't really say anyone else. Done a particular. I can't. Yeah, just Red Bull.
Can't be. Pastor Maldonado of the weekend, who royally screwed up.
Which Force India was it that went into someone right at the start, which then ruined Alonso's race? And
Sergio, that was Hulkenberg's fault, though.
Was it?
He basically cut him up.
Should we give it to Hulkenberg then?
It's a bit unfair. He was actually quite good.
I tell you what, one thing I would suggest is whoever it is who thinks they're having a mass rave at the end
of a
race.
Give it to Haas?
Yeah?
Actually, no. Whoever decided they were going to have a DJ again.
Yeah. Yeah. Mass rave, because if you're trying to do, you know, some serious post-race interviews and you've got a f***ing rave in the background, as a journalist I'd be going, this is unworkable, screw the 60,000 people who have paid their money, I need to do my interview.
Not only was it It was incredibly unoriginal, considering they did exactly the same thing last year.
It wasn't as awkward as last year, because last year they were still doing podium interviews, and they'd done like the podium interviews, and then they just went on to this rave, and everyone was just left standing there where they'd normally do the celebration to go, God, this is a bit weird, isn't
everyone
it?
Everyone bar Kimmy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least the bit I like was that they got Max out just to start, just to press the button to start the music. And it's like,
they were trying to have a conversation.
So, Lewis, how is your world? Yeah, can't do my job.
Since when does a rave scene go with Formula One? I mean,
Mexico, baby. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. To quote Jensen. Well, that, I'm glad we got that off our chest, or me. Giuliano Salvi, moment of the weekend.
You had one job.
Lewis wins the world championship, and that's your moment of the weekend, Callum.
Oh, I'm talking about Alonso.
Less for known. We'll miss him when he's gone. Race rating then, finally, Mexico, 6.75. It got last year. 10 is generally the score, the benchmark to get into the top three. Steve, you didn't really think it was that good a race, did you?
I didn't rate it too much about driving around at half speed. A lonely 6.
Six out of 10. I'd probably go 7. I think I'll give it a little bit more than that.
8.
Okay. 7 it is then. Even I can do that maths. And a short one to finish. Who will have the biggest smile heading home on their plane?
Daniel Ricciardo.
Running joke. So you can make sure you catch all of our NRF1 podcasts by subscribing by your podcast player of choice. Just visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe and you'll also find your link for your player, whatever it is. It should be there. If it's not, let us know. nrf1podcast@gmail.com is the email address. And if you're listening to us on iTunes, please rate and review us, because we haven't had many of those this year and it would be nice to have one. Callum's doing a bottom lip thing and everything. So, you know, if you've enjoyed us this year, let iTunes know, because I think they need to know. nrf1.uk/isonitunes is the link, or go on your podcast player and you'll be able to find the place to rate and review us there. Thanks in advance.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers. Okay, so it's Brazil coming up, the penultimate round of the Formula One season. I think it goes without saying we love Brazil, probably more than the people who have to go there, because there's a threat of them being mugged. And given we've now got a new right-wing president coming into the hot seat in Brazil at the start of next year, that'll be exciting. I obviously don't live in Brazil. I have no experience of the country. I've never been. I would love to go. It looks an amazing place, but it clearly does come with its challenges. That said, in terms of a Grand Prix track, brilliant, isn't it?
Oh, Callum, every time.
Come on, it's an iconic track. Interlagos.
Iconic.
Come on, get excited. Come on, Callum.
Championships have been won and lost there.
Well, yeah, and you know, the constructors will be. At 5 points, I think Mercedes need to win it.
Iconic as it may be, the track is still meh.
Could you imagine a Formula One season without going to Brazil?
Not really.
Exactly. Well, that's good enough for me. That means
that's
you care.
What I'm saying.
Well,
It's like saying I hate the Monaco Grand Prix. That still makes it a necessary race.
Let's not bring it.
I could change it for you. Jenson Button won his championship there.
Well, yeah.
There you go.
I mean, I did say it was iconic, but
it's
actually
his best race of his career.
Well,
Canada.
It's up.
You're calling
there.
That over Canada?
No, his best race was Suzuka 2011.
I bow to your knowledge. I can't remember that race. Look it up. I'll look it up.
Just for your information, he topped every session apart from one, which was by about 0.02 of a second or something like that. And then ended up winning the race more or less at a canter, even having to save fuel at the end.
From pole?
No, from second.
Because that was sounds a bit dull to me.
Top.
Canada sounds much more exciting. Okay, so it's going to be a great race. We'll work out who's going to be the most important weekend for in our Patreon podcast, patreon.com/NRF1. Let's get our predictions in. Of course, Prediction League. If you want to get your predictions in out there, please do. You've only got 2 more rounds to do it. And of course, all you need to do is submit between 1 and 5 predictions and get them in via whichever channel you wish before the start of FP1 in Brazil. I'll just tell you that as well, Steve, because we haven't had many from you this year. So get, as you're sat in front of us, give us a prediction for Brazil.
It quite often rains, so I'm going to say it's going to be a completely dry weekend. There we go.
How contrary.
My predictions mean nothing this year, yeah. So I can say whatever I like.
Love it. Go on then, Callum.
I think the checkered flag will be waved by Fat Ronaldo.
Okay. Oh my God. What a prediction that is. I reckon Nico Hülkenberg will qualify in the top 6 and then f*** up in the race. But there we go. Why not? And we'll have more of our predictions in our Patreon podcast and probably a look at our fantasy. Now we're going to leave our fantasy league team for the rest of the season, I've decided. In that case, we are done. Remember, if you do want to hear more from us and about the marvellous Mexico action and talking points, our full Sao Paulo predictions and opinions on the big F1 news and everything in between, although it's been a quite week, to be honest, back-to-back races and all that, then you can take in our exclusive Patreon podcast, including a Lewis Lovin, What Next Seb, and Van Dorn's Van Diemen. I feel like we covered all those in this podcast, but let's not worry about that. For that and a whole load of extra content, just check out patreon.com/nrf1. We will return with E235, a Brasilia review with another bonus Patreon edition included, all shortly after round 20 of the 2018 Formula One Championship. In the meantime, thank you, Future Radio. Thank you to the Rush Cutters, and goodbye from the crew. From Steve.
Goodbye.
Callum.
Adios.
And myself. Goodbye. This has been the NRF1 podcast. Enjoy a penultimate race at an iconic Callum F1 venue. Here's to what's left of the season, but more so, here's to Lewis Hamilton, the best of British, an F1 superstar, A-lister, and a 5-time world champion. Until Brazil, good night.